Good evening from Wuhan. We are located in the Hubei province where we're calling you from this evening, 10 p.m. China time. We're located, Wuhan is about 1,000 miles, give or take, south and west of Beijing. The population here in this city of about 13 million in the province is a population of more than 50 million. And it's an area that's known for rice production, aquaculture production. There's also some pig and some poultry production in this area as well. We arrived, thank you, Lindsay, for mentioning the delegation. So we arrived on Saturday. And since our time here in China, we have met with the ambassador to China, Branstad, and we have also visited with COPCO, which is the officials with COPCO, which is the largest oil seed importer in China. We also have had conversations with buyers, with soybean processors, and with feed mill operators as well. We're going to continue meetings here in China for the next several days. We'll be traveling to the Guangdong province. Several cities we'll be visiting in that province where we'll continue to have conversations with processors, with feed mill operators, really getting the lay of the land here in China before returning to Iowa on Sunday. So with that, I'd like to turn it over for some opening comments to Iowa Soybean Association, Bill Shipley. He'll provide some comments, and then we'll continue on with some opening comments with President-elect Lindsey Greiner, Kirk Leeds, and Grant Kimberly will say a few words, and we certainly want to allow the majority of our time here together for questions and answers. So with that, Bill Shipley.
Thank you, Aaron. Good morning, everyone. I want to say I've expressed my gratitude for 35 years ago that the American Soybean Association and the Iowa Soybean Association pursued the markets of China. This is my third time here in the last year, and it still continues to amaze me, the growth in China, but also that they want to meet farmers and talk to farmers about what we do and how we do it. I also see more growth opportunities for selling soybeans here as it continues to grow the pork, poultry, and aquaculture industry.
Well, all right, this is Lindsey Greiner. Good morning to all of you. It's night here. I'm about 10 o'clock at night. But anyway, my first impression, having this is my first trip to China, and my first impression is just the amount of people. This is a population-wise is a large country with an appetite for protein, and until you see it firsthand, you just can't imagine the number of people and the amount of construction going on. This country is starting to adopt a better standard of living, and with that comes a greater need for products that we can provide. So, you know, I just thank you for all calling in, and look forward to our visit.
Well, good morning, everybody. Again, Kirk Leeds, Chief Executive Officer of the Iowa Soybean Association, and since my, 20-some opportunity to be in China and to meet with our customers, this has been a very interesting trip. It's a very timely time to be in China, not only because of some of the issues that we've been talking about, but also interesting times given the Congress that's been going on in the five-year re-election of President Xi and the realignment of the political party here and the elimination of any term limits on President Xi or anyone being the president of China. So those meetings were going on in Beijing when we were in Beijing earlier this week. The issues that we've been talking about, you can imagine, range from lots of discussion of trade to issues related to soybean quality, overall supply of U.S. and global soybeans, as well as always as we get here and we're here this time of year is what are the expectations of Iowa farmers as it relates to the size of the soybean crop. So we've had some really fascinating discussions, and as I said, very interesting times indeed to be in China.
Good morning. This is Grant Kimberly, Director of Market Development for the Iowa Soybean Association. I think I would like to just start by reviewing real briefly some of the numbers that we've learned while we've been over here. Total Chinese imports of soybeans this last year hit a record 93.5 million metric tons. That is 62.6% of the total world exports. It's also 61% of the total U.S. soybean exports. This trend is projected to continue, and so we expect to see soybean imports from China grow to 97 million metric tons this current marketing year, by the end of the current marketing year. And then by the next marketing year, we expect them to grow even further from what various sources have talked about, up to 100 million metric tons. So putting that into perspective, 100 million metric tons worth of imports is over or almost nearly 3.7 billion bushels of soybeans that the Chinese market will be importing from around the world. So Iowa produces over 560 million bushels of soybeans. So it's certainly a very, very large market with no signs of stopping. It continues to grow. So with that, I will turn it back over to Aaron if he has any other questions that he wants to put in to wrap up, and then we can open it up for questions.
I tell you what, for the sake of those calling in, Grant, let's just go ahead and open it up right away to questions from reporters. I'll let Lindsay also help MC this part of the call. So let's go ahead and open it up for questions. If you could, when you ask the question, please do state your name and then who you would like to answer the question.
My question for any of the growers there and Kirk is, are they talking about an embargo on U.S. soybeans, and would they prefer U.S. soybeans over South American soybeans?
So first of all, your first question about trade, yes, the question of trade and the potential for retaliation by the Chinese has come up in nearly every meeting. Certainly with the ambassador, it came up as well. Most that we've talked to and certainly are hopeful, as we remain hopeful, that soybeans do not become the target that the Chinese will use to retaliate if they decide to retaliate to whatever the administration may be announcing in the next couple of days. Certainly the industry, our customers, COFCO and the feed millers and the soy crusher today, are hopeful that soybeans do not get caught up in as they call it, the politics of trade. These are business people that want to continue to be able to buy soybeans in the global marketplace, want to be able to turn those soybeans into quality meal and oil for the Chinese consumers. But there is certainly, Ken, an uneasiness here in China about the trade relationship between China and the United States at this point. Our conversations with the ambassador, he was certainly well aware of the concerns of Iowa farmers and U.S. farmers as it relates to the anticipated announcements by this administration. His promise was to us was to continue to be a voice for, advocate for the importance of agricultural trade. The second part of the question. Ken, what was the second part of your question?
What is their preference? Are they stating it of U.S. soybean quality versus South American soybean quality?
Again, it's mixed. We've had conversations with folks. One of the customers today, I think, has been buying 40%, let's see, 40% U.S., 50% Brazilian, 10% Argentinian for the last several years with no changes. We have heard some really positive comments preferring soybeans coming out of the Pacific Northwest, where we've had better than average protein recently, and we've had less problems with FM coming out of the Pacific Northwest. So I think they continue to mostly look at price and certainly availability. Certainly some of the customers that we've had relationships with for the last 30 years, some of those, many of those prefer U.S. soybeans because it's a consistent supply of high-quality soybeans. But this is a very competitive marketplace.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Ken Anderson at Brownfield. I don't know if you've seen it. The Global Times there has run an editorial that's hinting at possible trade retaliation against U.S. soybeans. And they mention, quoting here, massive subsidies provided to U.S. soybean farmers that give them an unfair competitive advantage in selling to China. So if you've seen this, and is this kind of setting the stage for possibly for possible retaliation, your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly we have seen it. We just saw it a little bit ago as well and read it through. And of course, as you know, that would be a an unfair characterization of U.S. soybean production. But that posturing, that kind of posturing, I guess I'm not surprised with, Ken, because of, you know, this is a political situation, and let's just say that there's rhetoric on both sides, and certainly the Chinese have been very clear that they're, if necessary, they will try to respond and apply pressure on the political side, and everybody knows that soybean is one of those targets. So that's, I don't think I'm surprised by it, but I would tell you both the industry, all the industry with people we talk to, we're somewhat skeptical that soybeans would actually end up being one of the targets, but I guess we shall see.
Well, I'd like to add that, this is Lindsey Griner, I'm sorry, that I heard about that report too, and I was unaware of these massive subsidies that we're receiving. And I think some of the news that I've watched over here indicates that the Chinese are very interested in sitting down and talking about these trade issues and getting them resolved. And I hope that the U.S. is as committed as well. And I think that in a negotiation, at least I'm hopeful that, you know, both sides kind of start out on opposite ends and then work their way closer to the middle and come to some kind of an agreement.
Bill, I'm curious, since you've got the perspective of time, taking multiple trips over there, how would you compare the opinions of people you're talking to over there about the U.S. product and the current U.S., you know, attitudes towards trade compared to, you know, previous years you've traveled over there?
I would say the attitude has always been good and still is. As far as the buyers, the crushers, and the end users, they don't want to see a trade war. They want to see it continue to buy soybeans from the United States. But as you know, sometimes things are dictated by our governments that are out of our control. They are still very positive, and we continue to be positive too, that this will continue.
Corey, this is Kirk Leeds. Let me just add a little bit to that as well. You know, we've had an opportunity to talk to media here as we've been here in China, and one of the questions that I received earlier was, you know, about this increased rhetoric from the U.S. about trade. And what I tried to point out is we all have to remember that these issues that this administration has chosen to be so aggressive on are really not new issues. These are issues that were raised in the Bush administration. They were raised in the Obama administration. And, you know, I think that one of the differences is here is we have an administration that is certainly appearing to wanting to be more aggressive. But the response I gave to the media was to remind them that my perspective, to answer your question, is that the Chinese are also being more aggressive. Over the years that I've been coming to China, certainly as their economy has grown, as they become more important globally, I do think it's fair to say that the Chinese are also more aggressive. But maybe tempering that a little bit is President Xi's desire to continue to move forward with the economic and political reforms that he has articulated as he got reelected. I think it would be a really poor timing from his perspective to see a trade war break out between the United States and China as he's continuing to move forward. I think there are legitimate concerns both by the Chinese and by the United States. And as Lindsay indicated, you know, we have to remain optimistic that once all the political rhetoric is out there, that, you know, folks that are in the trenches can find some middle ground here. There are certainly been some issues that we need to address with the Chinese, and let's just remain hopeful that more reasonable approaches come forward and we can move forward.
What are you hearing about, and I know the Chinese pork industry, their hog industry, you know, fluctuates up and down, but what are you hearing as far as their hog herd now and their demand for soybeans?
This is Grant Kimberly, and I'll take a answer at that. What we're hearing over here is that their livestock industry went through a reorganization or consolidation phase. They are moving more of their production to other parts of the country, away from the less populated areas of the country, and they're moving them more into the grain belt region, where they have less people but more feed sources available. The other thing is they're also transitioning to less of the smaller producers, the backyard producers, and moving towards more larger integrated operations. And so where it appears that short term, the hog feed demand is probably going to be fairly flat, the long term demand still looks really good once some of this reorganization takes place. So in matter of fact, one of the feed companies we met with today even mentioned that their primary business has been aquaculture feed, but they are now moving into a new line of the feed business and getting into the hog feed production side of it too, so because they see that as a major growth area for them in the future.
And this is Aaron Putzi. What another theme that we've heard over here quite consistently is that there's a renewed emphasis on quality of growth, that they've had, you know, tremendous growth in quantity, but as they look to the future with a more affluent population, the more affluent population is wanting to eat better. And so there is a real focus on quality of product. For example, a new species of fish or higher-end species of fish, as one feed mill operator told us today, that would require a better ration and more inclusion of soybeans and high-quality soybeans in that diet. So that's a move, and you really see it throughout the countryside, not just in terms of the food that people want to eat, but just also you know, the societal changes, the living accommodations. There's just a whole lot of focus on quality of life and quality of diet.
So as far as the trip itself, is there anything that you're hoping to bring home with you, in additional relationships or promises or just general knowledge of that market? What do you guys hope to get out of the trip in general?
Well, Corey, this is a trip that a mission that we take nearly every year. We come over about this time of year to meet with key customers, government officials. First of all, to meet with, reassure some of our existing customers about the supply, because there's always questions about the upcoming planting season, expectations, those kinds of things. We always talk about quality, consistency of the products. So we want to make sure that we're having those conversations. As you probably know, there's been lots of media discussion recently about protein concerns and FM material in soybeans. So we would like to have those conversations and make sure we're addressing those concerns. And then we always, like we are here in Wuhan, this is the first time our delegation's ever been to this part of China. We went to a new feed mill we hadn't been to before, crusher facilities, talking about U.S. soybeans and trying to open up a dialogue with them. As you probably know, relationships in Asia, particularly China, are extremely important. And even though, as I said earlier, this is a market that's very competitive on price, there is a value associated with relationships. And in fact, we're going to be having dinner with a gentleman tomorrow or the following day, I guess, who has a preference for U.S. soybeans based on those long-term relationships. So So the short answer question is that building relationships, addressing concerns, making sure that we can bring that information back to Iowa farmers and to U.S. farmers about how we continue to grow it. And then lastly, it's really market intelligence. The conversations we've had about the hog industry and the growth and what's happening, the consolidation, the streamlining, the movement of hogs from the eastern part of China, north and east up to the grain section, which has not always been where the livestock's been, and is also moving west because of water quality, environmental concerns. That we find that extremely valuable and insightful as we think about investing resources in developing this market for U.S. farmers. So that's the kind of stuff that we bring back with us, and it's what we've been doing for 35 years.
This is Tom Beaumont with the Associated Press. You've all known Ambassador Branstad, many of you, for many years. In your meetings with him, has he expressed frustration with the administration about the measures that could spark this retaliation that we're talking about?
Certainly, he's not with us. Again, Kirk Leeds. He did not voice any frustrations with the administration related to the policy. We talked fairly candidly about some of the challenges that this administration sees and the fairness or lack of fairness perhaps in trade. And he will support that. He did want us to help understand that he's well aware of the concerns of farmers in Iowa. He shared with us that the president is well aware. He shared that he has had opportunities to share those concerns with the president. But he was also quite adamant that, this president is working hard to get the attention of the Chinese, and he thinks that that's an important step that needs to take place. I would tell you on a more personal level, and this is now, I think, now my third time of seeing the governor, as I still call him, since he's been here in China. He is certainly in a very important position with a lot of tension, a lot of stress, not only with the trade issues, but certainly the relationship and the issues related to North Korea. And he has to be open to being accepting delegations from the Chinese government that will go to the ambassador and unload with their frustration about various issues. But from my perspective, having known him for almost 30 years, he looks good. He's as energized as ever. And when we talk to the embassy staff, they will say they've never seen anybody works any harder than Ambassador Branstad. And that sounds kind of like what we heard when he was governor as well. He's doing well. As you know, he's got some family here, so I think he's adjusted pretty well.